Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be starting the show today by talking with you about chronic wasting disease in deer. Since 2002 was first found in Wisconsin, efforts have been made to combat this. It's a fatal disease. So far, nothing seems to have worked well. And we're going to be talking about the efforts that are going on with two guests, Tom Hauge and Mike Foy, both retired from the DNR. Tom was director of wildlife management. Mike, a field wildlife biologist. He's got over 15 years of experience working with CWD. So as we visit with these guys, I hope you'll join in. What are your concerns about how chronic wasting disease is being addressed in our state? How about where you hunt? Join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tom Hauge with us by phone. Tom, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Yeah, Mike Foy with me in the studio. Mike, thank you as well.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Mike, maybe remind us about your background in CWD.
Well, I was the county wildlife manager for southwestern Dane and southern Iowa County when the announcement first came in. Tom, in fact, announced it at a Wildlife Society meeting that we were all assembled for. And so it was like right next door to my work territory, and I quickly got pulled deeply into it.
Yeah, and Tom, your experience with the disease was not a fun one when you were with the DNR.
It was quite a shock to the state of Wisconsin, and certainly set the wheels in motion when we first learned in 2002 of the discovery of the disease in our state. And that year in particular was just a whirlwind as we tried to do everything we could in our power to do surveillance across the state and try to learn all we could about where this disease was at that point in time.
Let's talk about a couple of basics first here. How does it spread? I mean, it's a fatal disease, right? Mike, maybe
yeah.
You can...
So to everyone's knowledge, it is 100% fatal once it's been contracted. However, deer rarely does it die directly of the disease. They die of some associated malady like lack of eating or infection or wandering out in front of a semi on the highway. It's the disease is 100% fatal to research in captive facilities where they can monitor the term of it.
Yeah, and it spread. How does it spread?
Primarily from animal-to-animal contact, what they call horizontal transmission. There is also thought to be a smaller portion of it that's from mother to fawns, so that would be like a vertical transmission. And then finally, it's been shown in a laboratory situation that it can be infect the prions stay in the environment and then can be picked up that way, though at this point it's not known how frequently that happens. But it's possible, and that's a huge concern because obviously you could contaminate the environment for years long after the sick animals were gone.
Yeah, for sure. Tom, can other animals contract it?
Well, researchers have been looking at that. Certainly other animals in the what biologists refer to as the cervid family. So think elk, moose, I believe reindeer. Those types of animals are all susceptible. They have been trying to look at whether or not there's a risk to livestock industry, and to date they haven't been able to reproduce it and get it to sort of self-generate in any livestock populations. They've also looked at whether or not a number of other species like scavenger species or predator species might be a mechanism through which it's spread. They know it can pass through those animals, but they've not yet, I guess, linked those as a causative agent for the spread of the disease.
Yeah. So the history of this fight to contain the disease, I think it'd be interesting to go back and take what were the efforts from a historical basis on fighting it here in Wisconsin? And
well,
Tom, go ahead.
Mike, maybe I'll start. Back in 2002, the knowledge that we had with regards to trying to control or manage this disease was very much more limited than what we have today. The basic guidance that we got came from the Western United States, and in particular the state of Colorado, who had been dealing with this disease for a number of years already by then. And there was a thought that this disease was affected by the density of the deer, the size of the population, and how they aggregated. And so the original prescription was to try to lower the infected deer population to a point to where maybe the disease couldn't sustain itself, or if it did, would remain at very low levels. Subsequently, research has filled in some of the missing pieces, and we now understand that it's not driven entirely by density of the disease, but probably more importantly by the frequency of contact between healthy animals and sick animals. So the notion of overall herd reduction is kind of on the back burner, and it's more important to try to get those positive animals off the landscape.
Yeah. Politics play in on this at all in the history of this?
Is this about, you want that one, Mike?
No, you can take that, Tom.
Okay. I'll just put it this way. Deer hunting is a religion in the state of Wisconsin. And when anything is so deeply of interest to the citizens of the state, you're surely going to find it manifest itself in terms of the political folks, whether that be no matter which party it is. Pretty early on, even the 2002, there was legislative hearings, and there was an urging of the department to take very strong action with regards to trying to do something about this disease. Over time, there was concerns. You know, one of the early things that we did was put a ban on, statewide ban on baiting and feeding. Baiting and feeding is a very popular activity, and probably maybe more particularly in across the northern part of the state. And it wasn't long before that became a bone of contention, and then we ultimately ended up with legislation that is currently in effect yet today that limits how the department can regulate baiting and feeding. So, yes, politics are certainly involved. I think they have their origin, however, in the just deep connection that Wisconsinites have with the deer herd and the belief system that is behind that deep connection.
Mm-hmm. Talking about chronic wasting disease of our deer herd here in Wisconsin with Michael Foy and Tom Hauge, both retired from the DNR. Mike was the field wildlife biologist, and Tom Hauge, retired DNR director of wildlife management. Questions or comments or concerns for them, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us. The email address is ideas at WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Tyler Ditter, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're taking a look at CWD in our deer herd now on the Ideas Network. Coming up next, Dan Small will be back to talk about this year's deer hunt special. That'll be at 11:45. But for now, if you have a question or comment, I hope you'll join in. Maybe an experience to share. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Ideas@wpr.org. As we look at what's being done now to limit or stop the spread of CWD, you guys want to comment on that? Mike, maybe you could start.
Well, the most pronounced activity right now is a very intense monitoring effort. Wisconsin, by all accounts, has the largest CWD data set in the world, with over 230,000 samples collected to date, and they probably are seen as just a wealth of data for CWD research. So there's a lot of researchers that are accessing the Wisconsin data set. Beyond the monitoring, the main emphasis of the department has been to try and control the spread by jumping on any new detections, what they call a foci, a new CWD positive animal in a new county, or just that. And then they are going to be taking comments for another few weeks here now on their internal strategy for working on those new detection areas. So you can go under department guidance and find that under the DNR website if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, and the DNR is really pushing testing.
Yeah, from a high of 20 or 30,000 different samples each year in the early years, that dropped way back after the loss of some federal funding, down to less than 5,000 samples in the late 2010 time. And then now it's been climbing back up. And for the last 3 years, they've been increasing sampling. And I think I heard the current DNR wildlife director say that she was hoping to get 21,000 samples this year, primarily located in northern Wisconsin and then in known areas in southern Wisconsin. So the northern Wisconsin areas are to do initial detection, what they call surveillance for that, and the other is to establish prevalence rates where you know that the disease exists.
Yeah, and they've really gone all out on this.
Yeah, there's now a little shout out to my former coworker Julie Widholm. She developed an idea for sampling kiosks, and a lot of the conservation clubs and such jumped on that idea. And now there's self-service kiosks scattered all around the state, plus a number of butcher shops and other places that will take CWD samples. Most of them are also associated with a dumpster for disposing of deer carcasses, so that they get off the landscape. The head and spine are known sources of infectious material, so we want to get those off the landscape. And I think there'll be something like 86 kiosks or dumpsters out this fall in every county that doesn't have a CWD or a landfill that or transfer station that accepts CWD materials. So they're really working hard on getting that sampling done and improving the disposal. And they wanted to shout out to all the clubs and private citizens that have donated to that effort, and they really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's great news. Jody in Richland Center has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jody.
Hi, Larry and guests. I'm just wondering if there's a relationship between bovine encephalopathy in cows and scrapie in sheep with CWD.
All right.
Tom, you want that one?
Well, you can fill in the pieces, but I guess the relationship, Jody, is that they're just in the same class of disease, see if I can pronounce this, of spongiform encephalopathies. In other words, that they ultimately end up causing holes in the brain that leads to the deterioration of animal function. But BSE, CWD, and scrapies are all different diseases. There is some interest in trying to figure out whether or not one might have led to the other. I don't think there's any evidence suggesting that BSE may have been caused by scrapies or may have been caused by, at the time, BSE was first discovered in England, and there was no documentation of any CWD in Europe. There now is. But with regards to CWD, there is a school of thought thinking that it may have evolved from scrapies, as that where a lot of the scrapies was found in the major sheep grazing, ranching areas of the state, and that overlap between those domestic sheep herds and the wild deer herds may have created the opportunity for the evolution. But that is a school of research that is still very, very far from reaching any definitive conclusions. So they're separate but related diseases.
And Jody, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give John in Sturgeon Bay a chance to join in. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. Great call, or great show. See, the question I have is really about, this has been going on for 20 years, not longer, right? And there's some things that we just unequivocally seem to know, and that is that the baiting and feeding does cause that spread. And I'd like you to confirm that, if that is actually true 100%, and I believe it to be true. So with that said, why do we allow, we have control over our public lands, why do we allow people to then knowingly damage the herd or expose the herd, including the elk herd, to this on public land? We allow lots of other public land activities that are going to do damage. So why, if that is true, then why isn't that one of the things that we know we can change and take some control?
Tom Haugie, let's go to you for that.
Okay. Well, as I alluded to before, the area of baiting and feeding is one of those areas where the legislative process, or politics, if you want to call it that, entered into the world of deer and CWD management. And there was legislation that was passed that was very prescriptive with regards to what the department could do to regulate baiting and feeding and what it couldn't. And so basically the department is prohibited from prohibiting baiting and feeding activities unless CWD has been discovered in a wild or captive deer within the county or within 10 miles of the county boundary. So as a result, what you've seen as CWD has spread and new detections have been found, you see that baiting and feeding prohibition map change on an annual basis to as the department is gains the authority to regulate in those counties. I should also mention, too, there was some additional legislation that was approved that set a limit on the years in which that ban could stay in place. So I may not get this exactly right, but I'm just going to say that, let's say we have it banned in a county, but we don't detect any additional CWD positive deer in that county in 3 years. In that situation, then the department, I believe, is required to rescind that prohibition on baiting and feeding in that county. So this is a case where politics or legislation is tying the hands of the department. I believe the department, from a disease management perspective, would eliminate baiting and feeding as an activity statewide if they could.
And thanks very much for that question. I think we covered everything in it. We lost our caller there, but I thank you for that question. John in Menominee Falls, your turn. Hi, John.
Hello, Larry. Great program. You know, I'm thinking of what you just said before I go into my question. Using lures is something that's very common. They could almost eliminate baiting and feeding based on that practice for hunting. My question is this. I've got bird feeders. I live in Menominee Falls, just at the bottom of the big hill from the downtown area. And on the east side of the highway of Appleton Avenue's Lime Kiln Park, and about a mile south of me is Tamarack Swamp. I've got deer on Hiawatha Avenue coming between Hiawatha and Arthur Avenue. I saw last year coming up through my backyard, and I have bird feeders out. And I noticed that one of the taller deer, one of the bigger does, would actually reach into my flat feeder, which is like 5 feet in the air, and kind of tip it a little bit. And now this year, I just got confirmation of it this week with the snow. There must be 5 or 6 deer coming up through there, and they've actually tipped that feeder enough where they've actually emptied it onto the ground. Should I be leaving the flat feeder out with that kind of feed, knowing that CWD is an issue, even in that area? Is it an issue in Waukesha County? Secondly, should I leave that flat feeder out, or should I just kind of not feed the birds through the winter, which is really a difficult thing for me to do?
Yeah. Mike Foy, let's go to you.
So, John, that's a great question. I like to feed birds myself. I don't have any deer coming into my yard because we have a big retriever in the fenced yard. But under the current law, Waukesha County has CWD infection. It's a CWD-affected county with an A, according to the state terminology. And you can only feed birds and small mammals from a feeder that is not accessible to deer. So if you do have deer using it, first of all, it has to be within 50 yards of a dwelling. And then if deer are using it, it has to be either taken down or raised higher or enclosed, like with some snow fence or something that will keep the deer from having the ability to get to that feed. So it is still legal to do that in a CWD-affected county, but you do have to do some due diligence there to keep yourself legal.
That's a good point. I hope some other folks from that area are listening in, too, because there's where we need to do a little more education, perhaps, on this for areas like the one John's talking about. And hopefully, John, thanks a lot for calling, and I hope you'll just avoid using that feeder or take it down or raise it up to the point where they can't get at it and the birds can. So there you go. Thank you so much. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Jack in Madison next. Hi, Jack. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have two questions. One, I thought I read on a website that that the CWD will not be eradicated, that they can't do it. They're just going to have to let the deer be what they're going to be. And number two is I've eaten CWD meat. It's not because I don't believe in CWD. It's just that we were very careful in how we cut it up. We didn't go into the bone, spinal cord, nothing like that. And so I ate it. And this was like in 2003. and through the years I have, and I am now 68 and I retired from deer hunting, but I was just wondering, what's the story with that? And I will take my answers off the air. Thank you.
All right, Jack, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. Well, Tom Augie, we'll start with you and then go to Mike.
Okay, sounds good. A couple of, again, really good questions. What Jack read with regards to eradication, I think, is the current thinking, at least based on the tools that are available to wildlife health specialists today. We don't think we can eradicate CWD. However, what I think there is an awful lot of evidence for is that we can take actions to reduce the prevalence or the percentage of the deer herd that is infected, as well as slow down the spread of the disease. Again, as I mentioned earlier, primarily by concentrating on actions that increase the removal of CWD-positive deer. So in my part of Sauk County, southwest Sauk County, where we hunt, we have CWD prevalences in adult bucks, bucks that are 2.5 years of age or older, right at the 50% level. So you get one of those, you know, bucks that probably most of us would say is a, you know, our dream buck type of thing. It's a coin flip whether or not it's going to be positive or negative. So we can't eradicate it, but there's plenty we can do to reduce the prevalence rates and slow the spread. On the consumption side of the equation, the news remains, at least, that there has not been a documented CWD illness in humans. That being said, the Center for Disease Control, World Health Organization, Wisconsin Department of Health, all advise not consuming a deer that you know is positive. Number of reasons for that. CWD is caused by a malformed protein that they call a prion. Not all CWD is the same. There are a variety of strains, each with their own probably properties and potential for human infection. And the human health folks are concerned that the incubation period for a human health disease could be a couple of decades before we see human health impacts. So on an abundance of caution, all of the experts are recommending not to eat a CWD-positive deer.
Let's go to Gordon in Oliva next. Hi, Gordon. Gordon, are you there?
I am here. I am here.
Okay, good.
I'm wondering about the effect of atrazine and other agricultural chemicals on prions. I have read from the University of Illinois that they have noticed that prions are windblown, found in sandy soils, and the land use type of heavy agriculture. Is this true?
Gordon, I'm not familiar with any direct connection between these encephalopathy diseases and pesticides. They are looking at every possible mechanism, and I can see that it's possible they could be windblown along with soil particles, but they are still kind of in the infancy. The cutting-edge research on that is being done right here at the UW, Wisconsin, and they're coming up with stuff every year about the soil prion interactions, but so far it's not been extended to pesticides or things of that nature, to my understanding.
And it seems like he was talking about agricultural areas. So far, the agricultural areas of the state have been more affected.
They have, but we don't know if that's because of agriculture or is it because of where the disease was first introduced. So we're just not that far along with understanding of all these things yet.
Thanks again, Gordon. Bob in Brewer, Wisconsin. We'll go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have a question about the science behind the baiting. Is there actual science behind the idea that baiting, throwing some corn on the ground, in fact, causes the disease to spread? Our deer are not social animals anyway, and they're touching noses all the time, and the rut, and making little deer. I don't see strong science there. If you could direct me to that, I would like to look at it.
All right. Thanks very much for that call, Bob. Tom, you want to take a crack at that?
Sure. Deer are social animals, and they do interact, as Bob indicated, at all times of the year. So eliminating baiting and feeding won't stop that interaction. But you can kind of think of baiting and feeding as almost an accelerant on top of those normal deer social interactions. There is research that was done here in Wisconsin. There was also research done in Michigan looking at the impact of baits on deer movements and congregation. And it's pretty well documented that it creates the mechanism for increasing, you know, that base level of interaction. So it more falls under the line of a best management practice from a health perspective. Just as we wouldn't, if we had a cold, we wouldn't want to share our glass with somebody else. It's along those lines.
John emailed that he's wondering how gas stations and stores can still advertise and sell pallets full of apples and corn instead of putting all of the pressure on the wardens to enforce the law. Why don't we restrict the sources that people are using to obtain the bait?
Well, probably simple answer to that is we live in a free democracy here, and there's all kinds of things that maybe are not well advised but are still legal if used in the right place and in the right way. So we mentioned that there's 56 CWD-affected counties where baiting and feeding is not lawful, but that leaves, some 20 others that are where it still is allowed. And under the longstanding commerce laws of our country, you can buy stuff places where you can't use it. Look at every 4th of July where there's fireworks for sale, even though they may be not legal to light in that locality. So it is a bit of a head-scratcher, but you can see it from the business's standpoint. There was a kind of a funny clip on the radio or the TV of deer coming into a gas station up in Vilas County or Oneida County recently and helping themselves to corn and carrots right there in the gas station overnight. So.
Oh, boy. Rob wondered if the growing number of wolves in Wisconsin affects the disease. Mike, do you want to?
Sure. So large predators have been shown to have some ability to detect, diseased animals of all, from all sources earlier than people can. And there is thought that they, if not prevent it, they may slow the spread or suppress the growth of prevalence. And that may be happening in northern Wisconsin where we have, about 800 or 900 wolves year-round, and it swells to 1,500 or so after the breeding season. I don't see it as a solution for CWD in Wisconsin as a whole, though. For one thing, the primary infection area is in southern Wisconsin now. And then if you just do the math out, it would take somewhere between 5, maybe 10,000 wolves in Wisconsin to have much hope of suppressing it just based on the number of deer that they eat each year. So, and so then you run into, well, it's kind of like the little old lady that swallowed a fly is, you know, if you're going to have that many wolves in southern Wisconsin, how many livestock are going to get taken? They're already being lost in the north. And I just don't think there's a social tolerance for that. But it is very interesting to kind of follow the trends in northern Wisconsin where there are wolves and at least speculate about how much they may be helping.
You guys here in the last couple of minutes, you've been involved with the CWD Payment for Positive Plan. Any traction on that? Well, maybe explain it and see if there's any traction.
Tom, why don't you start with that?
Yes, Larry. In the spring of this year at the spring hearings, a question on that allowed the public to weigh in on their support for payment for positives was approved by majority vote and in the majority of the counties. So we were very encouraged by that. Ultimately, it's going to take legislation to enact this. Number one, the Department Natural Resources would need funding to pay the incentives. Backing up, payment for positives is a financial incentive for hunters and landowners to remove additional CWD positive deer from the lands that they hunt. So that's what happened this spring, but it would take legislation to enact, and I'll let Mike add to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what we're kind of hoping for is just to pilot it, and I was just reading in the news this week that there's going to be a pilot study of some efforts to keep invasive Asian carp from getting into the Great Lakes, and I think, you know, these systems are very complicated. We don't have complete knowledge that we'd like to have, but at some point, you know, we have to try something, I think, and that's where a pilot that's well managed can really help help us figure out whether it has potential before we spend just a ton of money on trying to do it. But this resource is worth over $1 billion a year to the state of Wisconsin, and we're concerned that it is going to be a great detriment to it if we don't try something to reduce prevalence, and that's what this proposal is about. Is voluntary, but let's start rewarding hunters and landowners that can help us get these sick deer off the landscape.
Yeah, and well, let's hope we get that study going. You'd be in favor of that, wouldn't you, Tom Augie?
Oh, absolutely, Larry. You know, I tell people Wisconsin's deer herd is sick, and unfortunately, it's getting sicker. And Wisconsin state animal needs our help. So whether it's payment for positives or other actions, we do need to step up our game. If I got it right, I think this is our 169th regulated deer season here in Wisconsin. Thinking ahead, you know, what will the 200th deer season be? And I think if we want that to be a bright spot in our future, we need to start taking action.
Well, I want to thank you guys both for taking time to be with us today. Mike Foy, retired DNR wildlife biologist, and Tom Haugie, retired DNR director of wildlife management, our guest today. We learned a lot and really appreciate it. Tom, thanks.
Thank you, Larry.
Yeah, and Mike, thank you so much.
Anytime, Larry.
We will, you know what, in just a couple of weeks, there's going to be thousands and thousands of deer hunters going out into the woods in search of that white-tailed deer, and we're going to talk next with Dan Small. He's the host and producer of the public TV show Outdoor Wisconsin about the new Deer Hunt Wisconsin video that's out. I've had a chance to see it. It's a great video. So we'll talk more about deer hunting and about the Deer Hunt 2019 with our guest Dan Small, next on the Ideas Network.